There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Oh boy, there's something about a terrible movie. Don't you think, Caitlin?
Yes, I do think that.
Wow. Hi, I'm Jamie Loftus.
I'm Caitlin Durante.
And this is the Bechdel cast. It's our podcast. Beloved, I would say.
Beloved, yes.
There's something about this podcast.
There's something about the Bechdel cast.
Is it that we are emotionally abused and stalked all the time? Because anyways, this is the Bechdel cast. It's our podcast about the portrayal of women in movies. It sounded like betrayal.
Well, movies
in
usually
case,
betray women, yes.
Yes, and we use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point for discussion. But what is that?
Well, it's just a media metric that was developed by cartoonist Alison Bechdel that you can apply to a movie, like There's Something About Mary, for example. A movie will pass said test if there are two named female-identifying characters who speak to each other about something other than a man.
Yes.
So that's
But here's an example
it.
Of it. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Jamie.
Your hair is so short and cute and great.
Thank you.
You are abiding by the Loftus rule.
I am now the baldest woman in charge.
Yes, you're... You did it.
I think by the time this episode comes out, I will have gotten this haircut quite some time ago. But
that's just a little peek behind
at the time of this recording. I got this haircut today.
Yeah, it's fresh.
Yes.
Fresh snips.
There's like hair particles on my like shirt still.
Ew.
That I'm like itchy about.
I like it.
And that passed the Bechdel test.
It really did.
That was one of our better ones.
I honestly, I don't think, we're actually not that, it's hard.
It is hard.
It's hard.
But also.
That it goes against everything we say in every episode, but it is kind of hard.
We talked about like appearances and beauty, so.
That's true.
Wasn't that good of a conversation.
It counts.
It counts.
Yeah, we're great examples. Please donate to our Patreon.
Let's introduce our guest.
Yay.
She is an actress, a producer. You know her from Some More News, and she's a co-host of the podcast Even More News. Mm-hmm. It's Katie Stoll.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Hello. Welcome.
I feel so welcome. And I had to like quietly laugh so that I didn't blow my cover. People knew someone was here. I could have laughed. You're very funny. I like your vibe.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
We do our best.
Yeah. We are beloved, so.
Yes, you are.
We have to navigate this new hair vibe.
Yes.
The hair vibe has changed.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looks so good.
Thank you so much. We'll post some pics if you haven't seen them already.
We will.
I don't know.
Everyone, by the time they hear this, they're like, that's old news.
They will have known.
Although maybe you'll have already gotten it retrimmed. So
maybe I'll be fresh again. Have a shaved head by the time this episode comes out.
I was talking about it with, this doesn't pass the Bechdel test, but I was talking about it with Miles upstairs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, the baldest woman's in charge. I'm going to go shave my head, or even better, decapitate myself. And then who's in charge?
Then you'll win.
Yes.
Because we are constantly in competition. Women are always in competition with each other.
When we're not shopping, that is.
Right.
Yeah.
So today's movie is There's Something About Mary.
Oh, boy. We were going to have to do it eventually.
And the time is now.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Unfathomably upsetting. Like,
and worth saying, considered by some, I would doubt this would make... But
shout out to the movie, Doubt.
I always say it, I have such doubts. But by some, this is considered one of the greatest comedy movies ever produced. It's on the AFI list of best comedies ever.
They need to revisit it.
I mean, Farrelly Brothers, more like the Feminist Brothers. That's my first bad joke in my notes.
This is a zinger.
One of the men responsible for this movie went on to make Green Book. Yeah. So the atrocities no bounds.
We can
for
see
these men.
The progression for a man starting with There's Something About Mary and ending at Green Book.
Oh, what kind of person do you have to be?
Well, not long after this, they made that movie The Ringer about Johnny Knoxville pretending to be someone with a developmental disability so he can compete in the Special Olympics.
The Farrelly brothers, I would say, have, and it's very obvious, and There's Something About Mary, too, but they have a fixation on mocking disabled people.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, they have, I don't know where this is rooted in their lives, but it's like they've made a career out of mocking disabled. It's not just one movie. Yeah. It's literally
all of
that.
It's clearly from their childhood in some capacity or like some, I don't know. But there's two major plot lines that involve that in this film.
And they also they made Dumb and Dumber.
Yep.
They made the movie you just described. They made Shallow Hal, a.k.a. Fat Shaming the Movie. They're responsible for so much harm in the world, and now one of them has an Oscar for a movie that many would consider harmful. Rightfully so.
I mean,
it's yikes. You know, let's talk about our history. There's Something About Mary.
Yeah, Katie, when did you first see it? What's your relationship to the movie?
What year did this come out? 98?
Yeah, 98. Yeah.
So I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. I guess I saw it back then. I remember having seen it. I also remember that I didn't like it.
Good.
I will say that. I'm proud of younger me for not liking it.
Probably little Katie.
Little Katie knew what's up, but I don't have very many memories of it other than thinking Cameron Diaz is a babe, which is she is. She's a beautiful woman.
Which is true.
That is not the important takeaway.
No. God. Caitlin, what's yours?
I watched it, I would say probably 3 or 4 times as someone who was about middle school aged also, because I was, I guess I would have been like 12 when it came out, and I enjoyed it like my 7th grade year, and then didn't watch it again since then.
Yeah.
So totally forgot all of the horrible problems that are just running rampant in this movie. But I did see it at least a couple times as a younger person, I am horrified to admit. But I don't even know if I thought it was funny. I think it would just be like on at sleepovers or something. I never sought this movie out.
I have a horrible admission to make, which is that I did laugh in exactly one scene in this movie.
Which one?
When Ben Stiller's fighting the dog.
There's something funny. Well, because the dog is clearly fake.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about the way his little legs are sticking out that's funny,
I
guess.
And the way it's edited, it's all sped up, and you're just like, look at Ben Stiller fighting this, like, fucking taxidermy. Anyways, that made me laugh, and I have to live with that for the rest of my life.
I mean,
it's okay. You've admitted it.
It's
and that's
true.
Acceptance is the first step in your recovery.
We're all about processing here. We're just, my history with this movie, I definitely didn't see it when it came out. My mom, especially, was very, like, not about raunchy comedies. Mm. Like, she was very against them, morally opposed to them. And I don't think it was her, but I do have, like, a memory of, it could have been, like, one of my friend's moms, but Peter and Bobby Farrelly are from New England, famously. Mm. And someone's mom described them as the worst of us.
They're not wrong.
At a sleepover. Yeah. So I hadn't seen, I don't think, honestly, I don't think I've ever seen a Farrelly Brothers movie at all. So this would have been, I watched it the other day with friend of the cast, Melissa Lozada Oliva, mm-hmm. and you know, there's really not a good thing to be said about it.
I'll say I liked Jonathan Richmond did the music, and he's that guy that pops up throughout
singing.
He's a singer. He's I love him. You guys should check him out. So when you first start to sing, I'm like, is that? Oh, it is. Maybe this movie won't be so bad. Never mind.
No. Yeah.
So I like that about it.
That's fun. I did like the dog fighting scene, but I didn't like the scene where they let the dog on fire. It was kind of fickle with the dog scenes.
There's two different, way too long, because the entire movie is way too long.
So much of this movie
scenes
could be
wet. why is a comedy movie longer than like 100 minutes? Anyway.
It's a style of comedy also that's like, it's really painful to watch. And I don't know if it's just because it's not funny but this situation where you're like, you just keep grinding in this cringeworthy scene. And I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't feel like a lot of our comedies are that kind of comedy. Do you know what I mean? Lately, it's more absurd or whatever, but just that, like, oh, this isn't funny. It's just painful.
There are no jokes. It's just gross out humor, and it's all very stupid.
It's really juvenile. I feel like this sort of era of, because there's a lot of 90s and early 2000s comedies that like kind of fit this bill.
Yeah.
And then that sort of transitions into Judd Apatow comedies, which I also hate.
Yes.
So it just sort of
and are also too long.
Talk about just cut the camera, Apatow. Jesus fucking
You don't
Christ.
Need to let everyone's improv sit on screen.
Right. 900 hours of Seth Rogen hits the cutting room floor every time. I hate it.
Okay, I'll do the recap this wretched movie. Okay. It's 1985. We meet Ted. That's Ben Stiller's character. He's in high school. He's a dweeb.
They're doing a whole Pen 15 thing at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's this girl, Mary. There's something about Mary. That's Cameron Diaz's character.
She's hot and badly written.
Mm-hmm. That's the something.
That is. Thank you for putting your finger on it.
Yeah. I was like, what is it about her?
Everyone thinks she's awesome. Ted is like, ooh, who's that? Hubba hubba. But then his friend is like, oh no, she's got this boyfriend named Woogie. Sure. Then
the payoff on that is exhausting.
Yeah. Then there's an incident in the schoolyard where some guys are bullying Mary's brother, Warren, and Ted steps in to help. So then Mary's like, oh my God, a man did a heroic thing. I'm just going to automatically like him now.
Yeah.
And
this is the first motif of abusing disabled people that appears.
Uh-huh, because it is recurring.
It is bad, yeah.
She asks him to prom. She's like, oh, I've broken up with Woogie. Why don't we go to prom together? And he's like, oh, my God. But then on the day of prom, there's this whole mishap, and then he accidentally zips his pee-pee and his balls into his pants zipper. And
I knew, this was the only thing I knew about this movie, was that this happened. Yeah. Like, this is the thing that everyone remembers. I didn't even know about the whole hair cum thing.
Those are the two big ones. Okay. The cum hair and the zipper.
I knew about the zipper.
Yeah.
That was it. I was like, was that the same thing about Mary?
So no. He tries to fix it. It gets worse. And then he's rushed away in an ambulance. And that's the last time that Ted sees Mary. Cut to 13 years later, he's recounting this story to his therapist. There's like a weird gay joke that continues into the following scene with Ted and his friend Dom, Chris Elliott's character. And Ted's talking about how he's still in love with Mary 13 years later, but she moved to Miami, and beyond that, he doesn't know how to find her.
He literally doesn't know anything about
her. This is definitely like a pre-Facebook problem movie.
Right? Yes. Absolutely.
Like, none of this happens now.
You could kind of mercifully cut out 20 minutes of the movie.
Absolutely.
If there was Facebook, because then you wouldn't have the whole PI lying thing.
Right.
that takes up so much time. You're just like, this Ben Stiller's the star of this movie. Where is he for like a half hour?
He's not in the first half of the movie hardly.
Really at all, because it's all Matt Dillon, and you're like, what? Matt Dillon? Why is he agreeing to this? And I think, a spectacular waste of Chris Elliott, who I think is so funny. And, man, I hope he got a boat with this or something.
Got a boat.
Yeah, because this is not a good look.
No, it's not. He was in a bunch of problematic stuff around this time.
His solo stuff is great, though.
Yeah. So Chris Elliott's character, Dom, recommends that Ted hire Pat Healy, Matt Dillon's character, because he's a private investigator. I guess he freelances as one or something. I don't know.
This, like, income something, some sort of, like, you tracks unclear. Down people for money. I don't know.
Everyone's job in this movie is kind of unclear. Right. No one's really going to work. Ben Stiller leaves work what appears to be indefinitely to stalk Cameron Diaz.
Well, he's always like, I'm a writer, or trying to be.
So what do you do for money?
Right.
Yeah, it's very. And then also, like, Cameron Diaz is like a doctor of some sort.
She's an orthopedic surgeon.
When?
Absolutely.
You never see her at work.
That infuriates me, because absolutely nothing about her is a person that's observant or, like, you know.
Yeah.
She cares about people and stuff, but she's not an academic. She doesn't present as an academic. And then they just give one scene in her office where she walks in and walks out. And
yeah.
But that could be an office for anything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But they just dropped. She's an orthopedic surgeon. She's great.
I feel like that is at best, that's like the Farrellys being like, see,
we're
like feminists, because
absolutely
we do believe women can be doctors.
Like, she has it all. She looks perfect and she's a doctor.
Oh god, yeah.
We'll but only one of those is relevant to the plot.
I mean, she's a woman in STEM, and she is characterized as being a fucking dumbass, but we'll talk all about that. Okay, so Pat Healy finds Mary, and he immediately is like, hubba hubba, who's that? Because she's hot.
What a hubba hubbas today, Caitlin.
You know, there's more to come. She's hot. She's unmarried. She works with people with disabilities. And, you know, there's just something about her. So he falls in love with her immediately.
Just means she's hot. Like, anytime there's something about her. It's like all these guys who don't know her are falling in love with her. So it's like, I wonder what. Oh, I hate it.
Yes. Right. So then he tells Ted a bunch of lies to make him not interested in her. And that's a scene that we'll unpack.
We'll get there. Yikes.
And then Healy moves to Miami so that he can try to go and make a move on Mary.
Because he's a freelance detective.
Or something. And then he lies about himself a lot to make him seem more appealing to Mary, and then she falls for it.
Based on all the things that he's spied on her say that she wants.
Right.
This, for me, is where Mary's character tips from being kind and perfect to being stupid.
Absolutely.
She remains for the rest of the movie.
Yes.
It's very upsetting.
Uh-huh. It's very upsetting, yeah.
So then he takes her on a date, and then this is where we meet Tucker, a friend of Mary's. You know, he's sizing Healy up. And
The thing about him is he's British.
And disabled.
And also disabled. That turns into a whole thing.
Yep. Lots more to talk about there as well. So meanwhile, Ted hears from his friend, who is a chiropractor, who we meet earlier in the movie, throwaway character, who cares, but
really there for exposition.
Right. That Mary is actually a fox, because he saw her recently. So Ted decides to go to Miami, because if Mary's hot, he has to go look at her.
Maybe that's the one time that being an orthopedic surgeon is plot relevant, because the reason the chiropractor saw her, he's like, well, you know, she's an orthopedic surgeon, so I saw her at a conference.
It still doesn't make sense, because the reason Ted goes to a chiropractor is that we see him moving furniture, which I guess is his job, but we don't really know. But that all just feels so wedged in so that we have an excuse for him to hear about Mary through another source, but it's just horrible writing.
Another thing that could have been rectified by poisonous social media being present at this time.
Yes. So Ted, he's on his way to Miami, but he gets arrested because a hitchhiker that he picks up leaves a hacked up dead body in his car, and that is also in the same scene where, again, no time for it now.
And why is that involved in this movie?
Why? It's an extended, homophobic,
unbelievable
gag that is sickening.
And has nothing to do with anything. to boot.
Truly.
Other than earlier on, they'd made that gay joke about how rest stops are where gay people hook up. And then
and you got to pay off on that homophobic joke with an extended homophobic sequence.
A raid on gay men.
Yeah, we'll unpack all of that. And then he gets to Miami and he stalks Mary until she notices him. And then he's like, oh, hey, long time no see. Let me take you out to dinner so that we can catch up. And she agrees to it. And then Chris Elliott's character is like, oh, Ted, you got to jerk off before your date. And he's like, oh, okay, I'll touch my pee-pee.
They sound like 14-year-olds.
Right. And then Tucker, Mary's friend, goes to Mary and he's like, hey, this Pat Healy guy that you've been seeing, he's a murderer. But then we find out that Tucker also isn't who he says he is. He's not a British architect.
He's not disabled.
He's putting on a whole act to get closer to Mary because he is also in love with her. Because again, there's something about Mary.
It's just like every person who falls in love with her, the amount that they have lied and the amount of their life they have sunk into that lie increases.
Mm-hmm.
And it still gets worse from there somehow.
Yeah.
All right.
Right. So then Mary and Ted go on a date and she accidentally puts his jizz in her hair.
Hilarious.
Because again, she's a fucking idiot or written to be that way.
That scene is...
Like she didn't look in the mirror afterwards.
Right.
Who also just grabs a glob of something off someone else's ear? You're just like, this is just irrational.
It was also a huge glob. Even if that was gel, it's too much.
It's too much.
Who comes that much?
And then also, what's sick is the consistency.
Yeah.
No, that is not the consistency of cum.
Who is doing props on this movie?
Yeah.
That wasn't cum.
No.
Or maybe they
trust me, I know cum.
As a cum con
actually, we all jerked off and contributed to the cum for that shot. Fun fact.
No, I bet one of the Farrelly brothers just gave a bucket of their own disgusting viscous cum. And they're like, this is what cum is.
They've been saving it for months.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're like, this is really congealed and become a solid.
Oh my God, I'm sick. Okay. So she puts jizz in her hair. It's supposed to be
sure
funny.
Does. And then she just has a mohawk to the date, like you do.
Right. And then Pat Healy and Tucker, whose real name is Norm, team up to try to stop Ted from getting with Mary because, again, they're both in love with Mary. And then they drug Mary's neighbor Magda, who's another person we'll talk about.
Poor Magda.
They drug her dog.
Poor Magda's dog.
Yes. And then we have the second scene of the movie where we see just flagrant animal cruelty that did make you laugh, Jamie. So that's on you.
Okay. It's so clearly fake, Caitlin.
Don't cancel me over that. The dog is funny looking.
Sure.
It is. Listen, I'll throw Melissa under the bus too. We were laughing.
All right. Okay.
Not the part where the dog is set on fire. I didn't like that.
Okay, good.
When he fights the goofy dog, I laughed. And I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Okay, I'll never bring it up again. Okay, so then Ted and Mary, they're continuing to see each other. They're getting closer. But then Mary finds out that Ted hired Pat Healy to spy on her. And she's like, get out of here, Ted. So then he goes to confront Healy about it, who is still hanging out with Norm. And then he discovers that Norm has a long history of trying to get rid of men that Mary has been involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find out that Chris Elliott's character, Dom, is Mary's high school boyfriend, Woogie, who she had to get a restraining order against because he was stalking her.
This is revealed as something very funny.
Yeah, right.
Like it is supposed to be the joke the movie's been leading up to.
Right. This whole big payoff finally.
And this is also supposed to explain why Chris Elliott has been covered in disgusting hives for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Sure.
So then all the men who are obsessed with her converge in her house, including Brett Favre. Okay.
He was the ex-fiancé that Norm had driven away.
Yes.
Also, a fun fact about Brett Favre is that he was the fourth choice for the football player they wanted. Yeah, they wanted Drew Bledsoe. They wanted
Who?
Drew Bledsoe, he was a New England Patriot. That's the only reason I know who he is.
Okay.
But anyways, Brett Favre was like choice number four.
All right. Well, good for him.
Sure.
So then
who cares?
Ted is like, all right, I'm going to go. Mary, you should just be with Brett Favre. But Mary sees how good Ted is and like Warren likes him. I mean, she thinks that he's good.
The movie,
is how I'll rephrase
the movie has been telling us the whole time Ted is good.
Yes.
And he deserves
to be with this woman. He deserves the prize of Mary.
Yeah.
And she falls for it and she's like, I would be happiest with you. Mm-hmm. And then they kiss and that is how the movie ends. So let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back to discuss this.
I need a cold
movie.
Shower.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3XS to 6XL. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
Yes.
Okay, so to begin, the title of this movie blames all of the events of the movie on the title character.
Uh-huh.
That's something that we simply love. It's egregious.
Right. I also would argue that the title of this movie is just another way of saying she's not like the other girls.
Yeah. I think so too. But yeah. I think it's even worse than that. It's just like almost like she needs to be held accountable for this. Like,
there's something about her that we can't control ourselves around. And yeah, we're just good guys that lost our mind for Mary.
If she wasn't like this, we wouldn't be acting this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a few words before we get into like the characters. I did a little background research about, because I was just like, there has to at this point in time be some bad press about the Farrelly brothers. Mm. And there is a little bit, not as much as you would expect given what they have unleashed upon the world. But the Farrelly brothers did, I forget which Farrelly it is. I'm pretty sure it's Peter, honestly.
Doesn't matter.
I don't care. I'm pretty sure it's Peter. But there was kind of a frenzy around them at this time. They were like the hot comedy directors of this moment. So there's a lot of glowing press written about them at the time that people dug up 20 years later and were like, fuck, this is gross. Mm-hmm. I would like to share it.
Oh, please.
So, and Peter Farrelly had to, you know, really swerve away from a cancellation ahead of the release of Green Book. So An article from 1998 in Newsweek promoting the movie describes the, quote, sick pranks that the brothers enjoyed, while quoting Cameron Diaz as saying, quote, when a director shows you his penis the first time you meet him, you've got to recognize the creative genius.
Unquote. What?
No.
Cameron, what the fuck?
In defense of Cameron, what is she supposed to do at this time? What options does she have?
Sure.
And like that story probably wasn't received. Everyone's like, yeah, you're right. That's funny.
Like, this was perceived as okay at this time.
Sure.
So I don't hold that against her at all, but like, yikes. She's quoted in a 2000 article in The Observer saying, quote, I just adore those guys. Bobby's a little more shy. He doesn't pull his penis out as much. That's Peter's behavior. Bobby moons us. According to another article in The Observer, Peter Farrelly says he's pulled his penis out at least 500 times. So there's like...
Makes me so mad.
They're the fucking worst. Last year, Peter Farrelly... Let me see if I can find...
I imagine him now on his sets. It's just not the same. You just can't pull out your dick whenever you want.
No, he does just like a lame-o apology. He says, last year, I was an idiot. I did this decades ago, and I thought I was being funny, and the truth is I'm embarrassed. It makes me cringe now. I'm deeply sorry. Which is, I mean, at least he addressed it, but this is like, fuck you.
Yeah.
He's done too many shitty things. Like... He did have to, I mean, I don't know, I'm like, at least he had to be confronted with it. But so all that to say, they're as bad as they seem.
Yeah.
They're as bad as their movies would make them sound like. And they're whipping their dicks out at the cast, it sounds like, constantly.
Yeah, 500 times.
500 times.
Good grief.
That's the tea on what shitheads the Farrelly brothers are.
All right.
Fascinating.
Some helpful context.
Thank you. That's Jamie's context corner.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So, I mean, should we just start with Mary?
Let's start with Mary.
There's something about her is the thing.
Yeah.
The thing that makes her so special and, again, like not like the other girls is that... In many movies where people try to do this, they basically just take a like flat, underdeveloped female character and give her traditionally masculine interests or traits to make her seem cool and, again, not like the other girls. Because she likes football.
Yes.
She likes to golf. She wants to be taken to the big game and eat corn dogs and drink
beer. We have to talk about that scene because that scene is so...
The corn dog scene?
The scene where she talks about the corn dog
with Sarah Silverman,
and her friends.
Yeah.
So that scene, just because I had to like go back and watch it twice to be like, that really did happen. Where we try to like pay attention to like when are women shown eating in movies because it never happens, and that is a scene where she's at some like bistro with her friends.
They're at brunch because women be. At brunch.
They're all eating salad. And Mary, who, as we know, I mean, she's Cameron Diaz. She is Western beauty standards to the, you know, most egregious extent. She's very thin. And she says, I want a guy to play 36 holes with and still have enough energy to bring me and Warren to a ball game. Sausage, hot dogs, and beer. Not light beer, real beer. So she's like, truly, I mean, the guy's gal rhetoric is through the roof.
It's there.
But she's saying this like, oh, I just want to eat and drink as she is sitting in front of a salad.
Yep.
And none of the women in the scene even eat a bite of the salad.
Yeah. Right.
It is... unhinged.
Yeah, it made me crazy as
it
well
just
watching
shows
this.
What a hollow piece of shit thing that is. Because if a woman of any other size had said that line, it would have been played as a joke.
Yes.
But because it is like this extremely thin cishet white lady saying it, and she's not, and like in the back of your head, it's like she's not actually going to do that. It's presented as sexy.
That's the thing about her is that she's presented. She's presented as being this like guy's gal, not like the other girls type, but she fits the mold of exactly what is considered, quote, an ideal woman based on, you know, Western standards of beauty and appeal because she's thin, she's conventionally attractive, she's blonde, she's rich, like upper class, like she's all these things that fit into this like rigid mold.
Yeah. She's also, everything, but she's cool. But she's, you know, cool. She can hang with the guys. She wants a man. Yes, yeah, just I agree with you guys.
Another way that I think that this like this sort of stock character is formed is because the guys in the movie are portrayed as like losers. And so like a lot of movie quote unquote losers, they think that they're entitled to women that don't want to have sex with them. Mm-hmm. And the way that this is sort of avoided is like anytime there's a very attractive woman in a movie who turns out to be nice mm-hmm. to everyone, that is very fetishized, even when it's not logical for them to be nice. Because I feel like there's the opposite of that is like the very hot lady who doesn't have the time of day
sure.
for the losers, and she's a bitch.
Yeah.
So the fact that Mary would like deign to talk to them is like, we'll stalk you for decades. Yes. Like, yeah. So there is something about her.
That's the thing.
We've talked about how she's just so dumb. I don't want to call a woman dumb, you know.
Right.
But
she's characterized. She's written by four men, so.
It's just hard not to, like,
yeah.
completely unobservant, does not pick up on these obvious lies that are happening all around her throughout her life. Also, we didn't – this stood out to me. Why didn't she learn her lesson about, like, changing in front of windows? Yes. I mean...
Three different times in the movie, she dresses or undresses in front of wide-open windows.
Unbelievable.
This happens in movies all the time. Have you ever done this? I, for one, close my shades. I'm terrified.
I close my blinds.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a weird neighbor across the street that was being, like, always around asking me out. And I realized my windows were, like, right into his house. So I always close my blinds.
Yeah. No, I always, always, even when I'm, like, home alone, I will close my blinds. I just, ugh.
And I don't want to sound like we're victim blaming or anything like that, because
right.
she is a victim of being spied on and lied to in many of these scenes.
Yes.
What we're saying is that because she's an underdeveloped female character who is written by men, she is behaving in a way that probably no woman would actually behave, or really any person would behave, regardless of their gender.
Yeah.
Those scenes are just clearly only in the movie, written into the movie, to satisfy the male gaze, because her behavior just makes absolutely no sense and is just so wildly unrealistic.
It's exhausting. It's fucking exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It is. There's the first time that's done is during like the flashback sequence when they're mm-hmm. teenagers, and there's just like this little like shitty Fairly Brothers message where Ted is gazing at birds and fantasizing about what a crush he has on Mary. And then he looks up and Mary and her mom think that he was gazing at her. And
right.
and then he's like, no, it wasn't like that. And they're like, oh my God. And it's just like, there's like that little message that like, guys aren't actually leering at you. They're looking yes. at a bird.
They're looking at songbirds.
You're being a bitch.
You're overreacting.
Right. Oh, hated that.
But if I had that experience at 18, I am probably, even if I thought the guy was staring at me, I probably would learn my lesson from it. Just like
yes,
right, but she doesn't.
But she does not.
Continues to get naked in front of her wide open windows
maybe
all the time.
That's the something about her.
Yeah, there's a lot of somethings about her.
Here's a couple more. We already talked about the person who just grabs a glob of goo off of someone's ear, thinks that it's. Also, how did it get there? And again, what the fuck is that consistency? But anyway, so she like
he's very
sees
sick.
The jizz, and she's like, oh, better run this through my hair.
And leave it there.
And like not look in a mirror.
And leave it
right.
there.
And then she's also repeatedly given information that Pat Healy is a bad person. She like finds out he lied about a bunch of stuff, but then he's like, oh, I just like, I did it because I wanted you to like me or blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, oh, you're right. And then like falls for even more lies. She also watches him violently push down a bunch of people with disabilities while they're all playing mm-hmm. like touch football. And she's just
and
like,
then she's just like, oh, well, that's just what he's like. Okay, I mean, there's a large discussion to be had about disability in this movie
yes.
and in the Fairly Brothers,
right.
or whatever the fuck you say that word. But there's so much, and we're also like, we'll just say at the top, like, we totally open this discussion to our listeners, and mm-hmm. if you have any insights or like strong opinions on this, we definitely want to hear it, because we're sort of just reacting to it.
Yes.
But I felt like, because we haven't really talked about this yet, but Mary's brother Warren has an intellectual disability.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like that character's disability was there mostly to make Mary seem nice,
yes.
because she was so she was very good to him and very empathetic to him, which is a good thing to see on screen. But it just felt like slimy and exploitative.
Yeah. Oh yes,
because at the very beginning of the movie, like you said, like Ben Stiller's character stands up for Warren when mm-hmm. he's being bullied, and you know, Ben Stiller stands up for him, which is good on paper, but again, it just feels like his intellectual disability is just being used to show how nice the people who are not intellectually disabled are. We don't get any,
yes.
I mean, we don't get any look into
oh, yeah.
his life. I feel certain that no research was done.
Absolutely none.
Yeah.
Well, because it's just so, it's, I mean, and it's just exploitative because it's just used as like a narrative shorthand to explain what the something about Mary is.
Mm-hmm.
She isn't openly cruel to her intellectually disabled brother. Wow. Like, it's just, oh, it's so gross.
It is so gross. And there's almost no disability visibility in mainstream Hollywood movies. It's just virtually absent.
Which is yeah. why this is so egregious. Like,
right.
When
it is present, it's often not handled well.
It's
see most of the Farrelly Brothers movies. Because, like,
it's the joke.
Characters with disabilities will be played by actors who do not have those disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is the case for this movie.
And then we get some really extremely cringeworthy performances because of that. And then the characters with disabilities are often shown as being very helpless,
mm-hmm.
dependent, incompetent. And then the disability, like you said, will often be the butt of a joke, or the character will be mistreated, exploited, bullied, or othered in some way. So this is sort of like what the groundwork that's been laid by mainstream Hollywood.
And that's like, that's extended to the point where when Mary is an adult, she volunteers with intellectually disabled people,
mm-hmm.
and which starts out fine, and then quickly the second Matt Dillon enters the picture just becomes
ugh.
A nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's like they have some amount of awareness. They're like, okay, I'm not going to say the word, but he calls them an offensive
the R word.
The R word.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she says, I'm not sure that that's really
politically
correct.
Correct.
And then he keeps behaving like that, and we move on. So it's like there's like this acknowledgement. It's like it's almost worse when you're like, I know that this is wrong, and we're doing it anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right. And then she like stands her ground for a brief moment, but then like is won over by
yeah.
this creep, and then like later like, kisses him and stuff.
Well, that's the end of the line, right?
Right.
There. You let it go far enough.
Yeah, and that's like the point where her character for me completely disappeared and went from
mm-hmm.
like attractive, successful woman to be desired to that plus just completely irrational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and then yeah. Warren is the one main character with a disability who we really get to know at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with Tucker, he's faking it, so that doesn't count.
No. And there's also
also the way they portrayed
so
that whole scene
oh,
in the office with the keys and like struggling to get
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
is this supposed to be? It's obviously supposed to be funny, and it absolutely isn't.
No,
it's so cringy and horrible.
So Warren becomes like sort of he's like the representative of all people with disabilities, basically, for this movie.
Yeah,
and then the way that is framed and the way that he's treated and the things that character is made to do in the story, just like it's just all so not good.
It's bad, yeah. And then I guess the last thing I have to say about the Tucker character is that he, I mean, that just like perpetuates the idea that, you know, he basically says, he was like, oh, I was pretending to be disabled to stay close to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sending the message that disabled people are not desirable in any way. And
right.
that is like that's literally what he says. And that was why he was doing that. It's just, I mean, it's like the mental gymnastics the writers of this movie had to do and the amount of like prejudice they had to go in with is staggering.
Right. Well, this might be a good time to talk about that scene where Matt Dillon's character is describing to Ted what Mary is like. He's lying, but all the things says to make her seem unappealing are basically just like body shaming, slut shaming, disability shaming, because he's like, oh, she weighs 250 pounds because according to this movie, being fat equals being bad and unattractive.
Right, right.
He says that she is a mother, which is just, I guess, made to be unattractive. He says that she has had many different partners and has four children to three different men, which is slut-shaming.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
She uses a wheelchair.
Which is just shaming people with disabilities again.
That she lives in a housing project, which is code for that she is low income. Yeah, and then that's also
poor is bad.
Bad.
It really is the what's what of things to be shamed about.
And then
about.
Later he's like, oh, she's going to Japan to be a mail order bride. And then Ted says, what, are they desperate? She's a whale. Oh. So he has to then get in on this horrible behavior.
And then the way that is like the next, and then it's like, you know, Ted is, you know, leaves that interaction being like, oh man, I thought I wanted her to be the way I wanted her to be. And then he later decides, you know what? In spite of all that, I'm such a good guy that I want to see her anyways. And that's one of the many ways that this movie is like, he's actually really nice. And when you're just like, no, he's fucking
right.
Terrible. He's awful.
Like, that's the best they can do to paint a nice guy. Someone that hired a private investigator to find somebody
that
hasn't talked to him in 13 or 15 years, however long it's been.
Right. What is wrong with him that he is still in love with a girl that he knew 13 years ago who he barely knew then?
I'm curious. None of us will be able to answer this, but like we said, this is pre-Facebook problems, but like, was this charming then? Like the idea of someone needing to look you up out of the blue and hire someone just to track you down, even though she's gone anonymous because she had a stalker, so she didn't want to be found. But is that charming?
I think that at this time, it was still like a viable movie tool. Yeah. Like there's so much like stocky, romantic stocky. But this one is like, I mean, this one is like insane.
I just wonder
there's
if any so woman, if none of the other bad stuff had happened, if Healy hadn't gone rogue and all this stuff, if that seems like a romantic gesture to people in the 90s. We don't have that answer, but I just kept asking myself that.
I guess it, I mean, we were also fucked up in the 90s, yeah, you know.
Rough.
But like, I mean, this is just such a stalker narrative. And it's also confusing because Ben Stiller's character, Ted, will acknowledge that a lot of the stuff that people are suggesting to him, like hiring a private investigator and stuff like that, is creepy and stalkerish. He says that.
Yeah.
But then he goes through with it every time.
But it seems like the Farrelly brothers just be like, well, if he acknowledged that it was weird, but
then that makes it okay.
His intentions are good, so who cares?
Right. Exactly. Like, he doesn't think like them. He just does what they tell him to.
Why is he pining after a woman who he hasn't seen in 13 years and barely knew in the first place?
I mean, that is very weird. It is.
We got to take another quick break.
God,
we do need a break, guys. I mean, we've earned it.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Okay. Let's. I'm ready to get into the homophobic parts of the movie.
Why not?
Mary herself. I mean, there's like the extended scene, but once Mary and Ted start hanging out, Mary herself makes like a bad homophobic joke. She jokes about being bisexual.
Yes.
To Ted, who is like, well, I guess I could be okay. And then she's like, I'm just fucking with you. And so that is just like, was that ever funny? Like, gross.
So edgy, guys. It's so edgy that they are making these jokes.
Peter Farrelly is like on the other side of the camera with his literal dick out.
Yeah,
like,
you're just like,
oh god,
do we need more cum?
Because you gotta
need more disgusting viscous cum.
You gotta jerk off before a date, because like if you like go on a date with your balls full of cum, it's like going out there with a loaded gun. And the reason,
because dicks that, gun.
Right, and the reason that like you like feel better after you come, is it because after you've come your jizz everywhere, it makes you think like a girl, and girls like that.
Hate it.
I'm paraphrasing, but this is from the movie.
I honestly, I just like wrote down for that, I'm like not even going to try to unpack that.
Yeah,
like I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to mean. I don't want to know. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I do like wish unhappiness and a lack of success on the Farrelly brothers.
I hope someone steals that Oscar.
It won't affect them.
Let's do it.
Let's heist it. But now I've put it on this podcast.
Yeah, we're implicated now. Okay, yes. So there's that horrible joke that Mary makes.
Yes.
You know, turning bisexuality into the butt of a joke. Yeah. There's the whole thing that we already talked about where the joke is set up in Ted's therapist's office, where the therapist is like, oh, you go to rest stops? You know that those are homosexual hangouts. They're the bathhouses of the 90s for many, many gay men, is what he says. And then, a few scenes later, Chris Elliott's character is talking to Ben Stiller, and he's like, well, you know, you are a writer, and writers are artists.
Oh, yes.
And most artists are a little foofy.
That's right. I wrote that down.
Foofy. Foofy.
What? And then this all pays off whenever Ted pulls over to pee at a rest area and then stumbles upon what's essentially a huge orgy of gay men having sex in like the shrubbery. And then that scene concludes with the reveal that Chris Elliott is watching Cops and receiving oral sex from his wife.
Yeah. We had to talk about his wife character.
We have to talk about his wife character.
Oh my God. Yes. His wife character.
Made me so angry.
Oh my God.
And all the women. Okay, so Mary is this, you're perfect on paper gal, gorgeous, but also one of the guys. Chris Elliott's wife. We first meet her serving them beers, going inside,
asking if they want cookies.
Giving him a blowjob. And I think I was just saying this to you, where like at first when I'm watching it, I was like very angry, and I was like, hold on, maybe there's gonna be some sort of payoff where she leaves him. Nope.
No.
Nothing. Never addressed. No. Not just one.
And he's actively trying to cheat on her.
Yeah.
Like, it's right. Just horrible.
And then so in the blowjob scene, she like comes up into frame and she's like, see, I knew Ted was gay. And then he shoves her head back down. And I was just like, oh my fucking God.
That was a joke.
I also, There's zero self-awareness of what that represents, obviously. Because even in that first scene when we meet her and she's serving the beers and cookies and stuff, and Chris Elliott's character, what's his name?
Dom.
At that point.
Woogie.
He's like, yeah, this is the life. And Ben Stiller's like, yeah, that's what I want.
I want that too.
I want that. You want that?
You want a domesticated servant, basically, who is a baby factory? Because that is how his wife is presented in this movie.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
it's really not good. And she only shows up three times before we find out that Chris Elliott's character is stalking Mary also, which I think is a fun segue into the stalking motif.
Oh, yes. One last quick moment of homophobia where so Ted is arrested. And then as he's being let out of jail, there's like this big guy on the prison cell bed, like who's like spooning him. And that's also like played as like a, oh, how gross that poor little Ted has to have a man wrapped around him. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And that like people, I mean, the homophobic stereotypes around prisoners and just all it's none of it's good. That has literally no place in the movie at all.
Why is it
the whole thing could have been
there?
Also, if they needed to have Dom's character there, like he could have just gone on the road trip with Ben, you know what I mean? Like this whole thing didn't need to happen, and again would have made the movie much shorter and more pleasant.
It's so long.
I don't know if anything will make this movie pleasant.
No, there's really nothing. It all goes. Yeah. The stalking narratives, I think by the end, there's how many? 4 or 5 men who have been stalking, deceiving, lying to her?
We don't know if Brett Favre has been stalking her or not, but I think it's four.
She's got to have some real damage here. I mean, and trust issues.
It implies that one of the things that I was like, oh, that's so like, it's just, I mean, it's all very fucking bizarre, but she says she's been traumatized by it
to the point where she like changes her name and like unlists herself from like the phone books and stuff.
So when, and this is again like it's packed with irrationality, because when Ted goes to see her, he's driven the coast to go and see her in Miami, and then he's just like, hey, so I'm here, what's up? And she is explaining like she is anxious about hanging out with him because she doesn't give the details, but she was like, something happened in college, I was stalked, it was really bad, I had to change my name and move, and so I'm just not comfortable doing stuff like that. The irrational part I felt like was like, why is she not concerned about why he's here?
Yeah.
Right.
And has found her already, but I mean, she says that she has been traumatized by this, and then it happens to her 4 times at once. It's just so like,
yeah. Ugh. And that scene where they're all there. So, okay.
Oh, God.
Woogie's there and they come running to her rescue. And then Ben Stiller shows up, Ted, with Brett Favre. And there's this whole scene. And he's just like, here's the guy for you. And I know that she ultimately doesn't, but she's not overwhelmed by this. Her reaction to all of these men being there is so like blasé.
Right.
And her
female roommate is there and also doesn't really react to the fact that this is happening. Like, it's all like, she's just like, oh my God, this is so crazy. I don't know. And it's like, we're supposed to think what's going through her head during that is like, who do I pick? And not like, I should call the police.
Right. Right. Like, also, one more stalker, the guy that Magda is fucking.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, my God.
He's like, I was only fucking you to get closer to Mary. Yeah.
God, it's so horrible. And so the whole, like, long play of this movie is that Chris Elliott was Woogie the whole time and that he's been obsessed with Mary for many years. He breaks out into hives when he thinks about her. Which is another, like, there's something about implication of, like, what she is and who she is.
She's so awesome that she'll give you an allergic reaction.
And it's like her fault that he has this skin condition. Whatever. But like, and you know, like she rightfully rejects him. It's kind of framed that she's going to reject him, which we could unpack, but I don't really want to. And then, and because the point is, this character is breaking the law by being in this apartment because mm-hmm. she has a restraining order against right. him. And it's every time it comes up, he's like, oh, well, whatever. And like that. That's how it's brought up. And then at the end, when she rejects him, it looks like, you know, there's that whole thing where like, oh, she doesn't know who to pick. And then they tell her who to pick. They're like, yeah, actually, Brett Favre. So she doesn't. It almost ends with her not getting to choose.
Yes.
So they tell her who to choose. And she's kind of like, OK. And then Chris Elliott pops back up. And then he's like, Brett, could you sign this this shoe for the wife and kids? And then Mary says, what? And then he says, oh, shut up, cock tease. And we're all like, ha, ha, ha.
This so man is angry.
Breaking the law. And so, oh, my God.
And again, her response to, I would imagine she would have some sort of like, maybe post-traumatic stress, yeah. You know, the triggering of this again. Trauma. Yeah, but instead she's just like, weird, crazy.
She's like, definitely not you is my new boyfriend. I'm like, you changed your name right. and left the state.
And she does go out. So, yes, you're right. Like, it almost ends without her having any agency. And then she comes running out after him to give.
And makes the worst choice.
To give him his keys and then ends up, I'd be happiest with you. You don't have to choose any of these men.
She shouldn't choose. They should all be in jail.
And there's yet another infuriating moment where the movie is trying to humanize Ted is at the end of that scene when they told Mary who her new boyfriend is, Brett Favre. Mm-hmm. Ted makes this big speech and mm-hmm. he says, like, I'm no better than these guys. They don't love you. They're just fixated on you because of how you make them feel mm-hmm. about themselves. True. That's not love. That's, I don't know what that is. True. So there is like this moment where he says the first true thing we've heard in the whole movie. And then he leaves, which, you know, could have been a choice the movie could have made that might have made sense. Mary could have called the cops and then she could have moved on with her life or something like that.
Sure.
If Mary had some agency, he realizes this was very wrong. I'm lucky I'm not
in jail.
Going to prison.
Yeah.
Like, let me never do this again. But that's not what happens. Instead, like, by being self-aware for 1 second, he is rewarded yep. with the trophy of Mary. Because
yep.
he's the only one who displayed a dialogue line worth of self-awareness mm-hmm. that said that he shouldn't be with her because he's been stalking her and then he's right. rewarded. It's just...
It was my read also, because right before he leaves, he pulls Warren's like headphone away yeah. from his ear and then she is like, oh, that must mean that Warren trusts him. That's my signal that Ted is the best guy after all.
Yeah.
Which, like,
another exploitation.
As far as we know, like, exactly. Not, very exploitative. And then another, like, I don't think we see like Ted earning Warren's trust. Like, why would he? And like, even if that were the case, like, he doesn't deserve anybody's trust because, again, he hired someone to stalk her and then he started stalking her.
He's not dating
himself.
Warren.
Right. So, like, like, she has no agency. I think Mary is the most passive female main character in a movie possibly ever. Like, she, everything happens to her. She doesn't make any active choices on her own. I would say the only thing she does is maybe ask him to prom. Like, that's the one active choice she makes. But, like, other than that, she does nothing. It's everything, all these, like, creepy things happening to her.
I just...
Her not doing anything.
It's so... Ugh. What?
This is a stressful episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's my first one, but my heart has been like a little bit high in my chest.
We usually have more fun.
I mean, there's just so much with this movie, too, that it's like, oh, we've only got so much time.
I spent the whole time angry, and I couldn't watch it in one sitting. I started watching it, and I got halfway through, and was like, there's an hour left.
Same.
I can't.
Yeah.
I can't finish this right now. It's too bad.
I got a headache in the middle of the movie, and I had to watch it in two parts. It's just, it's just, like, it's repulsive. There's not one redeemable thing about the...
Except for Jonathan Richman, I guess.
I made a list of three things that I didn't absolutely hate. Would you like to hear them?
Yes.
Okay. I do like that Mary is the one to ask Ted to prom.
Yeah,
sure. Because I always appreciate seeing a woman taking initiative in like a romantic situation, because straight women are conditioned to be passive and wait around for men to ask them out.
But she only did that because her brother was taken advantage of by the plot.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point. So maybe not so good after all. The second thing is that Mary's stepdad, who we meet in one scene, is a black guy, and there are no weird jokes made about that.
Inherently is the joke.
There's that moment at the front door where, like, a black man answers the door, and he's just like,
I must not be in the right place, because how could a black man be in this house of white people? So, yep, never mind. Strike it from the record.
All right, hit us with one more. Let's see. Let's see if anything survives.
Let's shoot him down.
This also won't be good. I said, at least Ted doesn't lie whenever she asks if he hired Pat Healy to spy on her. He lies for a second, and then he comes clean right away. I feel like a lot of movies would have had him lie for a pretty extended amount of time, but he instead says, yeah, I did do that. But he just lies about
other things. He didn't have to. He could have come clean immediately. Just said, oh my God, here's the thing about Healy. I've thought about you this whole time, and I hired him, and now he fell in love with you, and I'm really sorry. You know what I mean?
Wait, does he say that? I think he does.
I mean, right? When first time he sees her.
I hate when movies like present you with a group of men, and then the female character is, by the movie, forced to choose the one who is the least awful,
even
though they're still awful. Because a lot of the men in this movie are, like, cartoonishly bad. Like, I think Chris Elliott and Matt Dillon, even though their behavior has happened, it's very cartoony, the way that their characters act, and, like, they're breaking out in hives, and they're shoving people, and they're doing all this, like, very physically goofy stuff. And so Ben Stiller's presented as the least bad of them, which is true, but like he's still not a good person.
Brett Favre, from the movie's own admission, the only reason she broke up with him is because Tucker had poisoned it and said a lie. So actually, he was.
Maybe Brett is the best of them.
I think he is. I mean, he didn't, as far as we know, didn't try to convince her, let her go when she broke up with him.
That's true. He accepted her decision.
And then, but still loved her and showed up, even though this is a crazy story. And
why did he show up?
Why did he show up?
Because Ben Stiller somehow got him on the phone.
You know, he just called up
Brett Favre on the horn. I don't know. Expectedly, I like to bring up Roger Ebert, my enemy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because he can't clap back at me because he's dead. He gave this movie 3 out of 4 stars.
Oh, Roger.
Saying, what a blessed relief is laughter. It flies in the face of manners, values, political correctness, and decorum. It exposes us for what we are, the only animal with a sense of humor.
I have met a lot of animals with senses of humor, so fucking Roger Ebert. Secondly, horrifying.
Just like to remind everyone that
I think it's got an 8 out of 10 on
the worst.
Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. People, I mean, which goes back to our discussion of like why people who are not just like straight white dudes should review movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, you know, this movie had a $23 million budget, made $370 million
at
the box office. It was hugely successful. And this movie was made off of the success of Dumb and Dumber, which I don't even want to think about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'll do an episode on it one day.
That would be one to do.
No, I'll cancel the show. I refuse.
Yeah,
people
love Dumb and Dumber still,
too. God, they made a sequel like a couple years ago.
And a prequel.
Now I'm going to have to rewatch it just because
I'm
curious.
I'll do an episode by myself.
Do it alone. I'm going to bury myself.
I'll watch it with you. I'll watch
it. Okay, cool. You'll be my guest co-host.
I'm putting a kibosh on Farrelly Brothers movies. God.
Well, there's a few more horrible things to talk about, shall we? Ageism.
Yep. Magda.
Magda. Let's definitely get in on Magda.
Mm-hmm. So she is Mary's neighbor. They don't technically live together, but she's constantly over at Mary's place because she's old, she's made to seem lonely and pathetic, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's how this movie feels about people who are older.
Well, there's like that huge visual gag made at her expense.
Oh, with the male gaze. There's so many shots of like
Matt Dillon.
Voyeuristic male gaze.
Another window shot.
Yeah. Matt Dillon is trying to leer at Mary with binoculars because he's a great detective. And he's sitting literally outside her house with binoculars, very subtle. And he's trying to look at...
It's like Keanu Reeves in Point Break when he's just constantly like, I'm an undercover FBI agent.
My name's Keanu Reeves. I mean, what's my character's name?
I mean, I know I'm in broad daylight, but let me just get out my binoculars and look around. Anyway, go on.
Poor Keanu.
I love him.
So, yeah, Matt Dillon is trying to leer at Mary with his binoculars, but he misfires because he's stupid, and he accidentally looks in Magda's window, and there is a clearly prosthetic piece of costuming that is meant to be, like, an older woman's body, and it's... He goes, ugh!
It's made to seem very grotesque. Disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah, yes. It's made it out to be this fucking body horror scene.
Right.
That is... very bad.
Yeah. And Magda, so we've got the Mary, we've got the wife that
his wife
goes down on him, gives him some cookies, and then Magda is this eavesdroppy, catty, like gossipy, wears all pink, obsessed with tanning, obsessed with like kind of a cougar, obsessed with men, and that's it. That's all she is.
That's all we know about her.
These are the women. These are the female characters we have
in this movie. Also, she's given a line of dialogue that she says about herself, which is ageist also, where she says, the last time I had a pap smear, the guy needed leather gloves and an oyster shucker. Ugh. So, like, they wrote her to make fun of herself for her age. I mean,
give it to them. At least they understand female anatomy. These male writers, they did their research of what happens in
puss
menopause.
Is an oyster, and you need an oyster shucker to get it open.
And it's funny because it's like, I know that we kind of get like uncomfortable talking about the female characters in this way because we don't want to be disrespectful.
Right.
But it's like, with stuff like that, it's like, I mean, we kind of just have to say it because they're fictional women written by four straight white dudes. And so they just are so not real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Magda, I think, gets an especially raw deal in this movie. Yeah. Because there's no other older women. Like, it's not like there's several older women characters, and one is insultingly pictured, and there's different types. She represents every woman over 30.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it's bad.
Yeah. Can we talk about Mary's three friends who we see in, I think, two different scenes? One of them is Sarah Silverman.
Sure.
You know, as a comic, I like her.
Sarah Silverman has engaged in her fair share of problematic shit.
Sure.
This is her. She was very young. Not to say that, but I have to imagine this is at least one of your first big break type situation things.
I mean, it's hard to hold the female actors accountable because it's like,
fair.
What else is available
to
them?
If I was back then young, I would have done the movie.
Yeah. And there's also Candy Alexander plays one of the friends. And
Are they even named? I don't know if we even know their names.
They're named in the credits. I don't remember if they're named in the... I see Brenda and Joni as Sarah Silverman and Candy Alexander. And then there's a third woman there, too. But... I super don't know who that was supposed to be.
They're all very interchangeable.
Yeah.
One of them is the one woman of color in the entire movie.
That's Candy Alexander.
But she's basically just Mary's token black friend who we see in those couple scenes. Not eating salad, and we don't know anything about her.
And they all get immediately, I mean, so there, that whole scene where they're now eavesdropping on Matt Dillon's character.
Right, because everyone's just constantly eavesdropping on each other.
Magda has some system, some things.
Neighborhood watch.
And can hear what he's saying. But he knows, so he's planting all this information. And they immediately are like swooning over him too. Even though what he's saying is ridiculous.
It makes no sense.
It's absolutely absurd. But they're immediately like, and like wanting to get a glimpse of this hot new guy.
It makes no sense.
Because all the women in this movie are written to be dumbasses. Like,
right. Like, who are obsessed with gross dudes. They're, oh God, yeah, everything about that character is just, like, coded to be ageist. Like, I think that even, like, the inclusion of, like, she loves her dog too much. Like, there's, like, implications that she's too close with her pet. And I feel like the subtext of that is because she's an older woman who's single.
Right.
So she's got to French her dog. Like,
they're like, just, like, she's shitty. Not a crazy cat lady. We're going to update this and give her a dog.
Right.
Right.
One last little quick thing, and we touched on this a little bit already, but just the excessive use of male gaze style cinematography, where Mary is framed in three different scenes in the movie as being like the object of very voyeuristic male gaze. The first one is Ted accidentally looking in on her through the window, and that's when he zips his peepee into the... Also, how did that even work? Their windows are across from each other.
I know. What is this, a compound?
Do they have a courtyard in their house?
I was thinking, like, the same thing.
That does not... I mean, they are shown to live in a big house. They seem to be very upper middle class.
Yeah, but it didn't look like a U-shaped house.
Right.
I didn't even think of that. The blueprint of this home.
It must be like a horseshoe house.
Or some Hogwarts situation where things are shifting. I don't know.
What if Mary is a wizard?
Now, honestly, that would really be something.
That would be something.
At least it's something.
That's like, the something.
You're she's a wizard, Mary. It's not you're a wizard, Harry. It's you're a wizard, Mary.
Oh! Yeah. We are breaking this wide open.
Crack the case.
There's the way that the camera, like, leers on women in this movie is gross. And there's also, I think, just, like, another Farrelly Brothers fixation on severe emasculation and the trauma of severe emasculation.
Sure, yeah.
Because that, like, the two moments that people remember from this movie are moments when Ben Stiller's, you know, the good guy of the movie is emasculated, and it, like... You know, we're led to believe at the beginning when he zips his dick into his pants that affects the rest of his life.
So why didn't they just cut the goddamn pants off? Like, just cut around the zipper? You know what I mean? Like, that could have been a start anyway.
Right. And the thing that sucks is, like, I mean, exploring the topic of emasculation and how that affects men down the line of their life, sure, that's a topic that's worth exploring. Yeah. But are these the men to do it? No.
For the male gaze, same, like, you say, I don't want to, like, be bashing female characters, but also these are female characters written by men. Mary never wears a bra, and her nipples are always really hard.
Always visible. Yes.
And I mean, I don't care. Good girl, live your best life. But those men put her in that outfit over and over.
She's
again.
Not doing it to be empowered. Nope. She's doing it to satisfy the male gaze.
And it upset me. Yeah. Add it to the list.
That's another very, like, 90s tropey thing. I mean, it's like, I didn't watch Friends. I was, like, too young to watch Friends for most of the time it was airing.
Yeah.
But I do know that Jennifer Aniston's nipples were very
so
present.
Hard.
In that, and I knew that, and I hadn't even seen the show before. Like, that was a selling point.
It's a thing that
she had a haircut and she had nipples.
Exactly.
That's what we knew
and
about Rachel.
That was who she was. And, like, it's just, yeah, our wonderful producer, Sophie, also pointed out, like, what a shitty poster and marketing there is for this movie, where it's just a very classically, like, she's, you know, it's Cameron Diaz is on the poster. She's wearing, like, a tiny dress that we don't even see her in the movie in.
Right.
There's, in some versions of the poster, there's the dog in a full body cast next to her. Like, you're just disgusting. It's horrible.
Yeah, she's, like, leaning over to, like, give
very
full shot
Marilyn
of her
Monroe-esque.
Of her cleavage.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
Anyways.
There's one line that Tucker says when he comes into. He's always just showing up places, too. He shows up to everyone's just showing up, and no one questions it anyway, because stalking is not a crime in this movie. Tucker brings Magda a bottle of, like, scotch or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he says, she's like, oh, you're so sweet. And he says, no, I just want to get you drunk so you'll pass out and I can give Mary a good rogering.
Yep.
Which, first of all, gross slang.
Right.
Yeah.
Every attempt at a joke in this movie, I don't even know how it was funny in 98.
That's what I keep coming was back it? To. And I guess it was because people...
$370 million.
Like,
it's just like...
Oh, my God.
I mean, I think that people that think that this movie is funny haven't watched it in a long time.
That must be the case.
I'm very excited. Now that, like, the 30-year cycle is coming around for 90s nostalgia, I think we will all get to realize that it was actually... not as great garbage. As everyone
never
says
good.
It was.
Never yeah. good. Yeah.
I mean, at least it means 80s nostalgia will end. I'm very done with that.
We're ready to be on with it. But yeah. Now we got to move on to like the early aughts. And oof.
God, that's maybe the darkest time of all.
Oh my
it's
God.
There's
early
and there's 2000s nothing to be nostalgic movies. About now.
No.
So.
Oh God, we're gonna have to think. I mean, I think the world will be over, but 30 years from now, so we won't even need to worry about the nostalgia
Knock
factor
on
for
wood.
Now. Their
fingers
the
crossed.
Reports are correct. So we know that this is the worst movie of all time, but twist, does it pass the Bechdel test?
Well,
folks,
I
had it passing the Bechdel
really?
Test.
Really?
Yeah. Let me
Where?
Find my, there is an exchange with Mary and Magda when we first see them together where they,
oh,
talk,
they talk
about,
the neighborhood watch.
And they talk about neighborhood watch.
But she's talking about.
And they talk about tanning.
They talk about tanning. Mm-hmm. She the neighborhood watch conversation evolves into a conversation about a man cheating on his wife. So she does start talking about a man.
The whole conversation doesn't pass, but there are
there's
I don't,
some snippets. Okay,
there's parts of that conversation that,
oh, no.
incredibly, against all odds, pass.
Because women interact more than I thought they would in a movie like this. I'm surprised.
I was surprised
Magda
was
even
friends.
Is there, and that she's given friends, but
yeah.
they only ever talk about. Ted or
yeah.
Pat Healy
or
then,
hot dogs
or corn
only
dogs.
Men and phallic items. It is a Woof. Slight pass and just another
it
example.
It just needs one conversation,
by
two
our,
lines of
by
dialogue.
Our standards,
that's
yeah.
a low standard.
I mean, they're very there are various renditions of the
yeah.
Bechdel test. We use one where it just has to be a two line exchange that passes.
Okay,
but
so
not even
just...
all versions of the Bechdel test require that a woman be named.
True.
So there's a lot of. It's
we're just scraping by on this one.
We truly are. It is a barely pass.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we've said it before, we say it again. It wasn't designed as a media test originally. It was an iconic queer comic by Alison Bechdel. It's not a perfect metric.
Right.
It's just something to start with.
Well, you know what is a perfect metric? Our nipple scale.
Yes. Now let's move on to the perfect metric.
Right. So we assign 0 to 5 nipples based on its representation of women. This gets a zero nipples for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, zero nipples for sure.
Yeah, there's no. I'm giving it -2.
Can
two.
I give it like a belly button?
Cute. Yeah,
if you want.
Because it's like I have an any belly button.
Uh-huh.
Brad,
like,
no. I know opposite of nipples. whatever. I was trying something. Zero nipples.
Zero nipples.
I'm giving it -2, and I'm throwing them at Ben Stiller's stupid head. God.
Yeah, everything about this movie is mishandled. And...
I would hope that, because I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard anyone, and maybe your experience is different, but I haven't heard anyone, like, defend this movie.
Yeah. And I don't think people are even, like, watching it
They're not
for fun anymore.
It.
Yeah.
I would hope. I feel like people remember, like, oh, I laughed at the dick scene in 1998.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's on. But the problem is it is on, like, the AFI best comedy that's 100
yeah.
years, 100 laughs.
That needs to change.
Someone should update that.
Can someone please revise that list? Is what I'm asking. Yeah, don't watch this movie. It's not. It's genuinely hard to watch.
Don't pay for the rental on Amazon or wherever you watch things. Don't do it.
Don't give any indication that you're interested in this movie. Don't even listen to this. Like, honestly, this.
Why did we do this?
I'd
episode.
Like to hear what they have to say about it now. The people involved, I'd like to hear.
I bet they'd defend their choices for some stupid reason.
Well, Peter
like,
Farrelly says, I'm so sorry I whipped my dick out 500 times.
Not
I'm like,
him.
Oh.
Like Ben Stiller, who's done, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'd be interested to hear what he has to say.
Cameron Diaz, I'd be interested.
Yeah.
Cameron Diaz, she's retired now.
Oh, did she retire?
Yeah,
from
she like publicly retired a couple
oh,
of years ago.
That.
I think
yeah.
maybe she's just like I'm done.
Well, she's always gets the same kind of parts,
yeah.
like the same character, which sucks. Because she looks the way she does, and, you know, there's one part that she can play.
Reinforcing beauty standards like that hurt literally everyone.
Yes.
Including because it's just like, yeah, I mean, she doesn't have the worst problem out of everyone, but it's like, you know, no one ever really took her seriously because she was never given a substantial part.
Right.
So we don't even know if she's a good actor, really. We, like, never got the chance.
Yeah.
Except, actually, Shrek. She is a good
actor. Well, in Shrek, Shrek 2, Shrek 3, Shrek 4.
Really, and we do get to shine. We do,
I mean,
get to see
she's
Cameron
really
shine.
Doing her best.
Yes.
So zero nipples across the board. Katie, thank you
guys,
so much.
So, this was delightful. Even if it was a
toughing
awful,
it out with
a stressful movie.
I have to go and, I don't know, drink a shot of,
yeah,
eat a corn dog and have a real beer, not some pussy light beer.
I need to go be not like beer. The other girls. I'm simply not like them.
None of, you know what,
I've been saying this for years. I'm not like
there
the other
is
girls.
Something about Jamie
there
and
thank you.
There's something about
thank you. There's something about Katie.
There's something about Katie.
There's
guys,
definitely
there's
something
about Caitlin.
I definitely think so.
Stop it. Ugh,
but you know, sound off in the comments because what is it about these women?
Tell us the things that are something about us.
I like to think that I've been responsible for a man breaking out in hives.
Oh, I have no proof I'd love of to it. Have that power.
But I think that is the one power attributed to Mary that is pretty cool.
I mean, I've had...
To make a pervert breakout in hives across state lines, a gift.
That's some far reach.
A wizard.
Yeah.
I mean...
She's a wizard.
You're a wizard, Mary.
I've had men lie to me, but not because they were obsessed with me. It's because they didn't like me.
Sure.
So that's my... cross. That's
all cross of our bear. Crosses to bear. That's like par for the course now. Mm. Not to diminish your pain. I'm just saying there's
it's
solidarity.
Okay.
I'm breaking
men
out in hives
liars.
Now. Yeah.
There, yeah. To
not
be fair, I've been covered in hives this whole time.
Oh, I didn't want to say anything.
That's the something about me. And I appreciate you for not
Wait,
saying it. The
Jamie,
something about
you,
me is I'm covered in hives.
Are you woogie? Have you been woogie this whole freaking time?
No wonder you love Chris Elliott.
How dare you? I'm a fan. I'm a Chris Elliott. I'm a fan of hit. Listen, it's not worth going into now.
Right.
Also, his daughters are very talented.
Yes.
Yes.
Who's his daughter?
Mm-hmm. Bridie Elliott is the one I know.
Bridie Elliott and Abby Elliott, who's on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Katie, thanks for being here. What would you like to plug and where can people follow you online?
You can follow me on Twitter at Katie Stoll. As Katie with a Y. Most people spell it with an IE, but that's the something that, about
there's
me.
There's something is about
that,
Katie.
Is that I spell it with a Y.
Wow.
And you
it.
Can check out my podcast, Even More News, that I co-host with Cody Johnston, and our show, Some More News. If you want news, that's where you can go to find some
we all
of
need
the news.
News.
It's one of the better places to get news.
There's something about
Thank you.
News.
Thank you very much.
There's something about the news that is
just overwhelming and debilitating.
Honestly, is it more painful to watch the news or to watch this movie?
Well, I thought we record the podcast and I was like, well, I'm going to go watch There's Something About Mary. This will be a nice unwinding
so
activity.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
wasn't.
This is
really
bad.
Painful. Yeah.
No, but it was fun to be
here. Thank you for being here. And thank you for, I mean, let this be the death knell for this movie. We're done.
Yes.
It's done.
No more. You can follow us at, you know, the places.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at Bechdelcast. You can join our Patreon, aka Matreon.
Mm-hmm. $5 a month gets you 2 bonus episodes every month.
Pretty incredible.
Very worth it.
And you get access to our backlog. So you're basically getting 50 episodes all at once.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff. You can get merch at our Tee Public store at teepublic.com/TheBechdelCast. Get all your Bechdelcast merch. There's the Feminist Brothers. No, I'm kidding. That will not be merch.
And otherwise...
Gotta get the cum out of my hair. Gotta go.
Bye.
Bye.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Re-
refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.